This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to this week's Rookie Roulette. I'm your host, Tyler Metcalf, and this week we have kind of a big name. Number one overall pick, Zachary Risacher. And to join me in breaking down Risacher's rookie season with the Atlanta Hawks in a few minutes here is going to be Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks. Go give Brad a follow. He does really, really high-level and comprehensive work covering the Hawks. But before we get to that, I just kind of want to run through some numbers to highlight where Risacher is, how his season's kind of gone, and what Hawks fans and NBA fans at large should kind of be pretty excited about with Risacher going forward. So Risacher was obviously the number one overall pick in the 2024 NBA draft, and it was kind of maligned, mocked, kind of treated with indifference, which is pretty rare for a 6'9" wing who has some of the defensive tools that he has, who improved as much of a shooter as he did. And yet everyone just kind of viewed it like, I guess, like, okay, you're getting a decent role player. And maybe that's all Risacher ends up being. But the growth that he's shown in his game over the last 3 years and throughout this season has been really, really impressive and really, really encouraging. Especially this last month, he's playing some of the best basketball of his life. And that's exactly what you want to see from a top level impact rookie. So Risacher ended up at 6 on the final No Ceilings composite big board. And he ended up at 4 on my personal one. He kind of flowed between 1 and 4 for me throughout the entire year. But, you know, just given potential upside and kind of ultimate role, he ended up at 4 for me. On the season, Risacher is averaging 12.4 points on 45, 35, 72 shooting splits. Solid. 3.7 rebounds, 1.2 assists, 0.7 steals, and 0.5 blocks. That's his season average right now. Decent numbers for a rookie, but not necessarily something that you're freaking out about, that you're getting overly excited about. But here's the thing. Risacher has shown constant improvement month over month over month. In December, he averaged 9.4 points on 38, 29, 70 splits with three rebounds, 0.9 assists, and 1.0 stocks, steals plus blocks. In January, his points jumped to 11.9 on 47, 37, 67 shooting splits, 3.9 rebounds, 1.1 assists, 1.0 stocks. In February, another jump, 12.8 points on 47, 44, 78 shooting splits with 4.2 rebounds, 1.7 assists, and 0.8 stocks. In March, another jump, and this one was a pretty drastic one, up to 16.3 points on 53, 39, 74 shooting splits, 3.8 rebounds, 1.0 assists, 1.1 stocks. So as we can see, his kind of impact in terms of rebounding, passing, defensive playmaking has been pretty consistent all year, which is, you know, whatever to be expected for a rookie. But seeing that growth in terms of scoring volume and efficiency month over month over month is incredibly encouraging for someone that many kind of maligned as not a real shooter, not a real scorer, just streaky at best. And that he was a guy who experienced a massive, massive shooting leap over a substantial sample size. So yeah, coming into the NBA, his year before was a little streaky. He had some ups and downs, but given the massive sample size that he had, it was a very clear kind of indicator of where his shooting was actually at. And now we're starting to see that, where in January, 37% from three, February, 44% from three, March, 39% from three. I would imagine that going forward for the rest of his career, he's probably going to be up around that 38 to 41 3-point percentage mark at solid volume, at his size, with some of the already kind of established offensive creators they have. That is huge for him going forward. When we look at cleaning the glass, just kind of some of the other areas that Reece Sachet has found a bit of success in, he's been really good. I've been really, really impressed with how effectively he moves off ball with his cutting and in transition, kind of finding those open pockets and aggressively kind of attacking the rim. And that mindset, that timing, that off-ball activity has resulted in him being in the 76th percentile among forwards in offensive rebounding rate. It also has allowed him to be in the 72nd percentile in at-rim shot frequency for forwards. That's awesome. Unfortunately, the scoring craft and scoring touch is pretty inconsistent. He's in just the 25th percentile in at-rim scoring at just 61%. So not a horrid percentage, but at his size, with his athleticism, that number has to improve. And that's kind of one of the big holes right now, is that lack of kind of scoring craft and creativity and touch. It should come in time. But then additionally, he's in the 84th percentile in corner three-point shooting at 45%. Exactly what you want to see. So Brad and I get into this a little bit more, but some of my kind of big picture thoughts on his offense are the scoring efficiency and the shooting improvement, the shot prep, the quick release. Very, very exciting. We're starting to see some flashes of his some more advanced dribble moves, especially in the open court. Very exciting as well. Passing is pretty non-existent. On defense, I really like the fundamentals, the work rate, the want to. It's all exactly what you want from a rookie. He's just very reactionary at times, and just kind of gets lost in no man's land. Results in, you know, some inconsistent foot speed stuff, defending on the ball. Again, he's not bad. There's just a lot of room for improvement, and it's stuff that comes with time and experience. So all very, very encouraging stuff from Reece Sachet that Brad and I will dive really deep into here in a minute. But before we do that, gotta bring up the wheel. We gotta figure out who we got next week for Rookie Roulette, man. I'm traveling next week, so I'm gonna do my best to get it out on Tuesday and on time, but no promises. We'll see. Who do we have? Chicago Bulls, who has been on a tear recently. I saw him live a couple weeks ago, and unfortunately it was one of his worst performances. Lucky me. But I will have another awesome guest to kind of help walk me through and us through the Bulls kind of season of late and Modest's development throughout the season. But that's for next week. For now, let's jump over to my interview with Brad Rowland. Joining me this week, very special guest, Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks. Brad, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me.
Before we dive into Reece Sachet and, you know, how his season has kind of gone, can you just please just tell everyone where they can find your stuff, how they can support the work that you do?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Locked On Hawks is the main thing, which you already said. I have been hosting Locked On Hawks since 2016, which is a long time. And I do cover the Hawks every day of my life, but I do more than Hawks stuff. Like, I've done draft stuff. I've covered the NBA and college basketball at Dime for a long time, fan-sided, all kinds of different places. The best place, though, I guess, is Locked On Hawks, and then I'm on social media, Twitter, Blue Sky, at BT Roland.
I love Brad's handle in the description, so make sure to go follow him. He does awesome, really comprehensive work. All right, Hawks, big surprise on lottery night, jumping all the way up to the number one pick after by far not having the best odds. And they will come away with Zachary Risacher, who one of the more fun aspects about last year's draft was how different everyone's board kind of looked. One of the less fun parts was how everyone just decided to kind of crap on every single prospect as much as they could. But it was weird that Risacher was this, 6'9" athletic wing who had a massive leap in shooting efficiency on a massive sample, but yet people still didn't seem totally excited about the pick. What was your kind of initial reaction? And I guess first on lottery night when they made that massive jump, and then on draft night when they did walk away with the kind of dynamic 3-and-D French wing in Zachary Risacher.
I think my initial reaction to the Hawks winning the lottery was that I laughed. And I mean that in a couple different ways. Number one, the Hawks have never won the lottery until now. This is the first time I've ever won it. And there was a lot of times when they were right there at the bottom of the league trying to win it, and they never won it. And for them to win the lottery in the year that everyone agreed, kind of, even people that were not super low on this draft agreed, there was not a huge prize compared to most years, right? That was a, without being negative about it, that was just the reality. There was no Cooper Flagg. There was no Wemby. Like, that didn't exist last year. So I thought it was ironic that the Hawks won the lottery, and I pretty much laughed when they were in that couple last minutes where it's like, oh, they're in the top four. Oh, they're going to win this thing. So that was one thing. But once that sets in, it's like, well, this is a nice bonus for the Hawks, obviously. Even as much as everybody kind of rolled their eyes and had a similar reaction to what I did about winning that kind of bad lottery, the Hawks are supposed to be in that, 8 to 10 range last year at best, basically. So going from that to, even if you don't love any player in this class, you still want to have the pick. Like, it's not like it's never a bad thing to have the number one overall pick in the draft. And, you go through the stages of, do you want to put it up for bid in a trade? But no one wants to trade up in this class, which was the reality. The Hawks did make calls that no one was eager to trade their life over for the number one pick in this draft, which made sense. And then you go, all right, who are the candidates? And you go through them. So it became pretty clear in the next couple of days, even, that the Hawks were in on Risacher. Not that he was definitely going to be their guy, but he was definitely part of the conversation with the Hawks, which made sense to me. We'll talk plenty about him, but it was an interesting ride, to be sure, when they won the lottery. And I've always liked him as a player, but I think that it was, to your point, it was wide open to where the takes were flying in all directions. I have a set of bookmarks that I will probably unleash at some point about all the Hawks fans who told me that they would never watch the team again if they drafted this kid from France that they didn't know anything about. So it's just one of those things, but it was definitely a roller coaster.
Just ready to go to war. I love it. So you mentioned that you do some draft stuff, and I'm sure once the team that you primarily cover gets the number one pick, you probably do even a little bit more. So, going into draft night, would Risacher have been the direction you would have gone, or was there kind of a different route that was making you a little more excited?
Yeah, it's so funny. If anything, just about me, I probably should have more takes. And what I mean by that is I'm very measured, and I get criticized for being too measured, if that makes sense. So, acknowledging that, I didn't have a guy that I was like, the Hawks need to take this guy. Like, I kind of understood all the different avenues in play. There's also the wrinkle that we could talk about briefly about how Alex Saar did not want to come to Atlanta, and that became pretty big. Apparent. That got reported. It kind of got out there. I heard that before it even got out there, and it really got out there eventually, and it was awkward.
Because he never worked out even, right?
No, he wouldn't work out, and I think that they made it very clear to the Hawks that we don't want to come to Atlanta. Now, that doesn't mean that the Hawks couldn't have taken it, which I said a lot at the time. Guys say whatever they want to. The team could still take them and call his bluff and say, all right, but you have to really think he's the guy to do that. You know what I mean? If a player's like, I don't want to come to you, you better believe he is the clear best player in this class to even think about still taking him at number one overall. So long story short, I had a public board. I had Saar number one on that board, but in a tier with other players. So it wasn't like I was saying they had to take Saar. And also the Hawks had an interesting dynamic where, I'm sure you heard this too, there was a lot out there about how Saar didn't want to play center. Which makes me laugh because he's been playing center all year long in Washington. Yep. But the Hawks, of course, had two starting caliber centers on their roster at the time. And there was this, anyway, not about Saar, but that was part of the conversation too. I thought that it was basically going to come down to, once it became clear they were not going to take Saar, it was Risacher, it was Donovan Clingan, and it was Reed Sheppard. And I kind of dismissed the Reed Sheppard thing because of the fact that Trae Young exists. That's really the only reason why. I knew the Hawks liked Reed Sheppard, but I was like, can you really take Reed Sheppard on a team with Trae Young? I just don't see them doing that. But they maintain, and probably still to this day maintain, that he was number two on their, like, if we didn't take Reed Sheppard, it was going to be Reed Sheppard. I would have been surprised, but they might have done it. And by the way, at this moment, they still have DeJounte Murray, too.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the reaction if the Hawks had drafted Reed Sheppard on a team with Trae Young and DeJounte Murray? So I wouldn't have taken Reed, and I said that. I was basically between Richichet and Klingon. And once you remove Sar, I did lean to Richichet because of just the logistics about what we'll talk about. Like, the, you already said it, 6'9 wing, all the stuff, all the boxes that you check with that player, to where even if things don't go as well as they possibly could go, right, there's a lot of appeal to that. High floor gets overused because, like, look, not everybody has a floor that has, that's supposed to have a floor. You know what I mean? Like, high floor guys can fail too, but a lot of those attributes that every team is looking for, the median outcome for someone like Richichet was appealing in that if you get a starting forward on your team for a long time, like, that's not a bad outcome, even number one overall. And I kind of lean there versus I thought Klingon might be better as a rookie, just because he was a little bit more established, all those things. And my baseline, and I say this lovingly on a draft podcast, is that rookies are bad most of the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And it's not a negative thing. It's just the reality of the situation, especially one and done 19-year-old rookies are generally not very good players. Klingon wasn't bad, et cetera. So by the time we got to the draft, I would have taken Richichet, but I also was certainly not touting him as, like, the clear pick either. I would be genuine about that. I was not banging the drum for Richichet. I would have traded the pick if they could have gotten anything approaching reasonable value for that pick. I would have done it, that kind of stuff. I didn't love him, but I did like him and understood it for sure.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned that 99% of rookies are bad. Like, it's to be expected. And, you know, we get these outliers like Luka and Wemby and, you know, the guys who just hit the ground running and are awesome right away. It's like, that's not how this is supposed to go for most guys. And so from draft night through summer league training camp and, you know, now basically the entire season, how has your kind of opinion on the Richichet pick and him as a player kind of evolved?
I think it certainly looks better and I feel better about it now than I did then. I would think that's probably a consensus opinion at this point. I don't know of anybody that thinks worse of him now than they did then. Maybe if someone was, like, super over the moon, but if you've watched him in the last, you know, even like 3 months, 4 months, like, he's looked better than I think he reasonably was going to look as a 19-year-old. He had the rough start for sure. The first month of the year, he couldn't make a shot. And I thought it was like, look, even if you don't think he's a great shooter, he's not going to shoot like this. So I wasn't worried necessarily, but I was like, okay, he's a rookie. This is what's going to happen, whatever. But, you know, even day back to summer league, I thought he looked okay. Like, he didn't blow anybody away at summer league, but also I don't think Richichet is the kind of player that summer league is going to showcase.
Yeah.
And I would have said that even if I wasn't covering him directly. Like, he's the kind of guy that's, like, not an on-ball player. You know, most of the time summer league is about on-ball guys and guards, and, you know, it's kind of tough to, for the, I don't use the word role player pejoratively. I love role players, mm-hmm. but, like, guy who might be a role player at some point to be the guy at summer league. It's not like the best showcase for him, but I thought he looked fine, looked good. Showed some passing chops that were not always on film, I didn't think, at the lower levels, which I was encouraged. It was probably the number one thing I was encouraged by at summer league, which is that, like, a couple of, like, left-handed, like, kind of showy, nice passes. And then he executed. And also, you know, you don't want to overweight this, but the chatter from people that I trust was like, hey, this guy's going to be good, is basically what it came down to. Not going to blow you away, but this guy's going to be legit. And that was building more and more and more. And then you go away for a couple months, right? Come back to media day and the take cycle happens. You know, there's nothing to talk about from mid July until training camp. It's quiet. Right. And, it sets in, like, the Hawks drafted this kid that nobody knows anything about. And he wasn't great in summer league, obviously, which I thought was kind of silly, but I came into the year thinking, okay, I think he had a rookie of the year chance because of how open this class was. I think he was like 9-1, 10-1 when rookie of the year. I was like, that's not a bad bet on Richichet, that kind of thing. But I thought, you know, reasonable expectations, make first team all rookie as number one overall pick. He'll play a lot. I wasn't sure how much he was going to play, but number one overall pick, he was going to play. And there was also this interesting dynamic about him being on a team that even now, this actually ended up being true. was going to be in the play-in mix all year long, like versus teams like Washington with Alex Saar or even Castle and San Antonio pre-Wemby. I thought, you know, they might compete for the 10th seed in the West, but not like they might, but they might not. He was going to be a situation that was a little bit different than a number one overall pick was going to be in. Like, he wasn't going to be gifted 35 minutes a game, and he had to earn his time. So I think the journey, I could go step by step, and I won't keep doing that because it'll be boring. But I think that I certainly have liked what I have seen. I was encouraged already, but I would have a hard time with anyone who wasn't like who hasn't been even more sold, even if they already were sold. The fact that you've just seen it, you know, I'm a big believer in seeing it at the NBA level is not a small thing. Like, you can project all day long. I'm all about scouting at the lower levels, into college, into international play, but there's no substitute for seeing it at the NBA level over a decent sample size. And the fact that he's done that and been like, I don't want to overstate it, but like been like a starting caliber wing now for like three or four months is like, that's not a small thing in the NBA. I'm not saying he's a top 50 player in the league right now. He's not, obviously. But the fact that he's been at the very least a playable rotation player on a pretty decent team as a 19-year-old isn't a small thing. And he's gotten better and better to the point where the last, again, like 3 months, he's basically been a starting caliber player. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. In the open, I ran through some of his numbers and kind of month over month improvements. And, you know, the big one, I'm basically everything's been pretty consistent except for the scoring, which just kind of keeps getting better and better and better. And, you know, coming into last year's draft, everyone was like, he's a super streaky shooter. I don't buy it. It's like, this dude has like almost a full NBA season worth of sample of, it's like, yeah, do some of the months kind of fluctuate? Sure. But he's a 17, 18 year old kid playing in a pro league for like 70 plus games. Whereas, you know, these college one and done kids are playing 27 ish at best. And since the calendar turned, you know, he has an average lower than double digit points, you know, 11.9 in January, 12.8 in February, 16.3 in March. But I think even more importantly is that 3-point percentage has kind of stabilized in that kind of high 30% range, where it's, you know, 37% in January, 44% in February, 39% in March. On the offensive end, is that kind of where you're seeing his biggest impact come? Because I'm just, even on tape, even when the shot isn't falling, it seems like the release has sped up even more so than last year. The shot prep, the high hands. I mean, he's taken a lot of like even no dip catch and shoot threes. I mean, 45% from the corner on the year. It's all really, really encouraging stuff that feels like it's almost been fast tracked a lot more aggressively than, you know, even going back like 2 years looking at his stuff in FIBA, where it's like, man, this dude's an awesome defender, but I don't think he has anything on offense. And now it's like, oh my gosh, he's knocking down these kinds of shots regularly. Is that kind of what you're seeing as well? Or has that kind of caught you off guard with how quickly that development has come?
I think that it's kind of what I thought, but also this, it's been faster to your point than I would have envisioned. So I think it was like the first like 16, 17 games, 4 or 5 weeks, he was shooting like 25% from three. And there was a panic, right? Because it's like, okay, I get it. He's a number one overall pick. He's not making any shots. I never thought that was going to continue. But also, the rep is out there, like you said, of him being a little bit streaky. Even last year, he kind of had a hot streak. He had a cold streak. And it kind of leveled out in a pretty good range in his final pre-NBA season. But it was not always consistent along the way. But I think there was also some mechanical things that they had to iron out early in the year. He was... look, the probably the biggest thing that he's going to have to get better slash improve is that he's got to get stronger. And they've been saying that all year long. Everyone knows this. He's a really skinny kid. He's long, but that's the Hawks are not always the most revealing on what they think of anything. They're very, very guarded. But one thing that they were ready and willing to admit is that Zach has to get stronger. And he has already. We already started to see that. He's not bouncing off guys the way he was 3 months ago, et cetera. But I think some of you mentioned before his shot prep. I think his legs were kind of a problem early on this year. His base was kind of wide at times. Like, he was a little bit off balance. It wasn't buttoned up in the way that it has been now. And I don't want to overstate it either, because you're right. Some of the no dip stuff, some of like he's flying around screens now. They have definitely emphasized to him since the minute he got here that you have the green light. We want you to shoot. Shoot. And Quinn Snyder they laughed about it in camp even. Like, Zach's a pretty not shy kid. Like, he's confident, but he's a quiet kid. He's not like this boisterous guy that you might think is number one overall pick. Like, he's pretty understated. Maybe that's part of him being fresh. I don't know.
I saw that at Hoop Summit too, where I know a lot of kind of big personalities, Ron Holland and DJ Wagner and Bronny and Reese Shea kind of looked uncomfortable in that setting. And it wasn't like a bad thing, but once they started playing, it's like, oh, there's a competitive fire. But during practices and stuff, it's like, oh, maybe just because he's an international kid and hasn't known these guys for a decade. But that definitely came across then too.
Yeah, and his English has gotten a lot better already. Like, he's speaking it every day, and he's not a native English speaker. Maybe that's part of it too. But I mean, they've really had to pound it over his head to, like, hey, be aggressive, Zach. We want you to shoot. And it's not, they don't have to beg him. He's doing it now willingly. But it was always an emphasis from day one. And I think that I'm a little bit, I won't say skeptical, I'm not sure that he's suddenly going to be a 40% true talent three-point shooter on these attempts. I think he is in a little bit of a hot streak right now, if I had to guess. But he also, I'm very, very sure he's not the guy he was the first month of the year.
Yeah.
When he was shooting 25%. So that's a very broad way to say it intentionally. But I think they've been impressed, and I have too, with like the way he's mechanically gotten sounder. He's gotten stronger, more consistent, and the types of shots. Like, I think the way he's been discussed in some circles recently, people maybe trying to downplay his rookie of the year stuff or whatever it is like, oh, he's just a secondary player. He's just taking wide open threes Trae Young sets up. There's some of that. Like, there's some open shots, of course, but he's not taking wide open threes all the time. He's flying around. He's a movement shooter. The no dip stuff, the contested shots. He's not just a stand in the corner and shoot open threes guy, nor is he ever going to be. So that's one part of his game. It's probably the most important thing. If you had to pick one thing of his entire profile, the shots got to go in. I said that a lot this summer. It's like, I love this kid. He's got to make shots. They all understand that. But that's only one thing we talk about, but it certainly has gone in. And I think the process behind it has been encouraging to me, to where like they diagnosed some stuff they didn't love the first month when the results were bad. And it's not all like fixed forever, but I think they've definitely done a good job kind of rounding it out.
So aside from just the shooting, Reese Shea's offensive role has basically been just play finisher. And something that's kind of really stood out to me, though, especially recently, is how effective he's been with cutting and finding these open pockets to kind of exploit off the ball with his off-ball activity, running in transition, getting downhill. He doesn't, the finishing craft needs work, but he's getting to the rim a lot. What else is on the offensive end for him has kind of stood out in a positive fashion for you, aside from just the shooting improvements that we've seen?
Yeah, everything you said makes total sense to me about his play finishing. And look, this is one of those things where if he was on a bad team, they might have given him the ball more to be an initiator. But because the Hawks are trying to win games and they have Trae Young and other guys that are ahead of him on the pecking order, it doesn't really make a ton of sense beyond just development to give Reese Shea a bunch of on-ball reps right now. But he has done more stuff with the ball in his hands as the season's gone along, intentionally. Not like straight pick-and-roll initiation, but like some DHO stuff. He's been more active with the ball. I think the finishing has gotten better visibly already. The numbers have supported that as well. Some of his crafty, like left-handed finishing as a right-handed player, like he's got a very strong left hand already, which has been, it's one of those things that like jumps off the screen to you. I have a colleague, Kevin Chenard, who works for Hawks.com, who did like a whole compilation of Zach's left-handed finishing that was like, man, this is a lot of left-handed finishes in a short period of time. So the ambidextrous stuff is really helpful. He's not the most physical guy yet. That's, of course, the biggest thing. Goes back to the strength. But the craft aspects have been better as the season's gone along. He also loves, I'm not sure where this is going to go, but he loves a fake of any kind. Like he loves to get into like this mid range area and he'll do like four straight fakes back and forth in a way that's not, you don't usually see from a 19-year-old kid in the mid posts. It's not always intentional, but and I think some of that may have to do with he's not super comfortable yet, like just going through somebody. But he is crafty with the way he gets his shot off at times inside the arc. It's not a straight where like some guys, especially at his age, if it's not a straight line drive, they don't really have a plan B. He's got several plan Bs. They're not always the prettiest, but they're crafty. He's not afraid to do that. And then the passing has played up too. Like it's not primary initiation, but he'll make a pass every game or two that's like, whoa, okay, that's a real pass. Like some of these cross court skips, he'll make the right play. I don't think he's ever going to be like a 6 assists per game kind of guy, but he makes the right play already in an impressive fashion at 19. So that's a lot of things. And the one thing I want to make sure I say before I forget it, is one of the reasons why the Hawks have played well recently, just beyond him, is that he is a transition weapon already. And it's not in the way that Jalen Johnson is. Jalen Johnson's a grab-and-go threat with the ball, pushing with the dribble. Ricochet, I think he's been encouraged to do this, but I think it's also him. He flies down the floor. He's a very, very fast in a straight line, and he busts it regularly and beats guys down the floor and gets easy buckets for himself and other people. Well, and at some point, I'm sure it's going to be more on the scouting report than it is now for other teams. But he's so fast and so long that it's going to be a weapon. As long as he keeps doing that, that's going to get him some free points and the team some free points. And it's like, you know, it seems simple and that anybody could do it, but really not. Like, he's got the length and that straight line speed and the ability to kind of just make himself run that way, that I think is like, it's not getting lost locally, but I think maybe nationally it sounds like a small thing. It's kind of a big deal when you're trying to generate points again on a team that's trying to win.
In terms of kind of offensive growth and what, you know, you kind of hope to see from him going forward, what gives you the most kind of optimism that there's more to his game down the road than just play finishing? Is it some of these passing flashes? And then kind of on the flip side of that, is there anything that you're seeing that's like really concerning? Like, oh, maybe you're going to be a little more limited than we would necessarily hope for a number one overall pick.
I think a lot of it is going to come down to the handle on both of those things, honestly. Like, if you're looking at where he can scale up potentially, is if he firms up his handle, just even like, you know, just a little bit even, but
yeah,
hopefully more than a little bit. But that's probably his biggest weakness offensively right now. It's just like he's not someone that's going to like put you in the mix off dribble right now. He doesn't really do that. Now the straight line drives, he can do that. Like, he is decisive, which I'm impressed by a lot of the time. He'll just go. But he's not someone who's going to set you up and beat you off the bounce like creatively against a real defender right now. And you don't have to be able to do that to be a very, very, very good player. But if you're talking about like star outcomes, you probably need a little bit of that. You know what I mean? One comparison that I really don't like for Ricochet very much, but it's been out there a lot, is the 6'9" Klay Thompson thing. Like, I don't like that, which is why I said it that way.
Yeah.
But something Klay could never do is that. Right. So if you're trying to say Zach will never be able to create off the bounce, like, okay, I kind of get it. He also isn't going to probably be the same shooter as Klay Thompson, who's a top five shooter of all time, probably. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that that's both a concerning thing for Ricochet, is that he hasn't done that yet. Also, he was never going to do that as a rookie. Like, if you watched him on film pre-NBA, he wasn't going to suddenly have a super tight handle as a rookie. Mm-hmm. That was not realistic. But if that's the one area of potential concern and the one area of potential growth, because if he can kind of do that to a passable, solid level, that unlocks a lot of things. I think he can be a 18 to 20-point scorer in the NBA with his current skill set, as long as he, you know, just improves. Like, I'm saying without the creation aspect like that. Just doing the little things, making shots, playing more minutes, all those things. He can be a guy who scored like a third scorer for a team the way he currently is right now. But if he wants to be more than that, if the Hawks wanted to be more than that, to get some of those, you know, hopefully number, you know, quote unquote number one overall pick kind of outcomes, I think that's probably the biggest swing skill. I mean, beyond the shot. Of course, the shot's the biggest thing for anybody. Mm-hmm. He's got to make shots or nothing else matters for his offense. But number two on the list is like, can he be more of an initiator off the dribble?
On the other side of the ball, the defense, that was kind of always Ricochet's calling card coming up through FIBA. And he even somewhat last year, but for some, like, surprisingly, I've come away from this season with him a little underwhelmed on the defensive end. Like, I like his work rate. I like the fundamentals. I think he wants to be a good defender, and you know, I don't think it's anything effort based, or by no means is he a bad defender, but it feels like a lot of it is just like really reactionary, and they're the processing speed, the instincts, the anticipation isn't quite there yet. A lot of the times that comes with, you know, experience and time, and like you said earlier, rookies are typically bad. What is just your kind of big picture kind of takeaway with his defense so far?
Yeah, I think this is one of those areas where it's a little different because he's playing on this team that's trying to win. But I think he's generally in the right spot, which is it seems like the bare minimum, but it's not for a 19-year-old. Like, I think he's ahead of where most of his compatriots are at that age, is just like being in the right place at the right time, executing the scheme, which is good. I like that about him. He rarely makes like glaring mistakes, and that's not a small thing for me. But the next thing is like you said, the you know. being more proactive. Like, he hasn't been a huge havoc creator. I'm not sure if he's ever going to be a huge havoc creator. I'm not sure yet if he, like, what his upside is as far as like playmaking events. He is averaging, I want to say it's like a stock, you know, like 1.2 stocks per game, which isn't like nothing. Like, that's better than like DeAndre Hunter's ever been, for example, who's he kind of is replacing in Atlanta, but it's not a huge number. Like, he's not playing a ton of minutes, all those things, but he also doesn't have to be that. My biggest thing is like is the strength aspect and the rebounding aspect. I think one thing about Ricochet that's going to have to be better defensively, and I do put this in defense because it matters, you have to close possessions, is he's not very good on the glass right now. And for a guy with his length, that should hopefully be a weapon for you as a small forward in the future, if you want to frame it that way. Like, right now, he is a below average rebounder at the three, probably by a lot, to be honest with you. He's more of like a shooting guard level rebounder right now. And again, 19-year-old skinny kid, I get it. But it also plays into some other stuff. So the playmaking, also, I have a hard time, and I'm not trying to write this off by any means, but there are just less havoc creation events to be had when you play with Dyson Daniels.
Very true.
That's it's actually like he's the only player that I think I'd ever say that about, but because he's like so far ahead of the entire field in the NBA this year, like every single deflection stat steal metric, it's like how many more of those are available to everybody else. But I'm kind of kidding, but I'm also kind of not. I think generally Ricochet has been as advertised defensively, but I also know that my baseline for rookie defense is quite low, and I think he's exceeded it. But I also think that if he's going to be a plus defender in the NBA, which they're hoping he's going to be, and the Hawks believe he's going to be, like, that was part of the pitch, even like the behind the scenes off the record pitch post draft about how, like, why they like him so much. They think he's going to be a plus defender, like not a, you know, all defensive team guy probably, but like someone who like you never worry about ever in any matchup, basically, is what they're hoping that that he can be. He has to get stronger, but I think there's definitely a path to that. And it might help him right now that he's not the number one guy on their defense. Like, you know, playing with Dyson helps you. But honestly, there have been several times this season when I've looked on the floor and said, you know, in a time where Dyson's off the court, and I'm like, he's their best defender right now on the perimeter as a rookie. And again, that's a low bar in some of these matchups, some of these lineups that they're playing. But they have leaned on him enough to where, like, they trust Ricochet to execute. Even when he is like, they put him on some tough matchups. Like, he's guarded some of the best players in the league this year. Part of that's positional, but they're encouraged, and I'm encouraged too. But you're right. I think if you're looking for like super high ceiling outcomes defensively, they haven't necessarily been a ton of that this year. But I do think that he's executed well, and that's kind of half the battle.
Yeah, and I fully acknowledge that I'm being overly kind of nitpicky with the defense, just because I my expectations for him coming into the league were really high on that end of the floor. But when you're just kind of being thrown into the fire, like you said, in a lot of these situations, there's a very steep learning curve. And, you know, like when I look at just how he's defending, I never come away with like, God, the footwork there is awful. Like, man, you're not sitting down in a stance at all. Like, you just completely missed that rotation. I never get any of those takeaways. Yeah. It's just like, you waited for him to, you know, lull you to sleep on that step back instead of kind of assuming he would get there, or you know the offense is a pass ahead and you're just kind of treating each pass as a separate event and not kind of anticipating. You know, he ends up getting out there and, you know, contesting in some form or fashion, but it always just feels like it's like half a step too late or a step too late, which again, he's 19, he's a rookie, it's to be expected. But the effort, the fundamentals, the foundation of his defense, I think is really encouraging. And it's like, it really feels like one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's, you know, there were some up and downs this year, but after an offseason and going into his second year, it wouldn't shock me at all if we see just a massive leap from him on that end of the floor.
I agree. And I think that he's part of this maybe is that he's always been like incredibly long for his competition, and now, I mean, he still is really long, but like I think he relies on that. I think he knows that he's got length, and he uses it, but also maybe overly relies on it sometimes to like make, you know, to make up ground and to, you know, to do certain things. So you're right, I think being more anticipatory in general would make sense, but overall, I mean, I still think it's been a really successful defensive season. It's just not been like one that's like gonna make a ton of highlight reels necessarily.
Agreed. All right, so going forward for Ricochet, what are your just kind of expectations for him, you know, for next year and then maybe a couple years after that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, trying to be reasonable and not just extracting what he's done the last 30 games or so, when he's shooting the heck out of the ball and averaging 15 points a game as a rookie. And like, it's been pretty impressive. And
it's nice of him to have a career high, last night.
But I wasn't sure when this is going to get posted. So I didn't want to mention that what happened yesterday. Yeah. He had 36 points the day before we're recording this, which is always nice for the old averages for the game as well, for the season as well. I think that, taking a step forward as far as like, this is a big summer for him. I wonder if we won't see him play. I don't know if the league will like give the Hawks a gentle nudge to say, please let him play for a game or two in Las Vegas, just for PR sake, because the league will do that every once in a while. But I think he's definitely going to be like a two and done summer league kind of guy, because as you showed, he's proven enough already to not be there and playing much. But no, I think just getting stronger is the biggest thing. They know that. I think he'll probably come back. By the way, apparently like a legendary worker already. Like I tend to roll my eyes a little bit on that kind of stuff. You might too. Just talking to people in the league, it's like, all right, everybody works hard. I get it. Yeah. But all the reports are great, so that's encouraging. If nothing else, it's not a bad thing. I think he'll come back stronger. I think he'll, as far as like his second season, what does the rest of the team look like as far as like numbers and things like that, like Jalen Johnson coming back. I don't think that he would be averaging the usage that he has been in the last 2 months if Jalen Johnson was playing. He'd be playing a lot still, but the numbers probably wouldn't be quite as high if Jalen was around. And Jalen will be back next year as their number two guy. But I think that he's going to be, taking another step forward next season reasonably. Growth is not linear, which is true. It's a trope, but it's also accurate. You don't just do this. You don't just take the curve up and to the right all the time. But I do think that, numbers wise, average 15 a game next year on good efficiency, play good defense, take a step forward. As far as the ultimate projection is concerned, I think year two is going to tell us a lot. That's very basic, but I'm not projecting star outcomes for Zachary Richey. I think locally, you won't be surprised. Locally, after he does this, the people that were out on him 3 months ago are now thinking he's going to be a five-time All-Star,
Well, they've always been diehard, so they have his jersey and everything. They knew he was going to be awesome.
That's part of the fun. And look, I will say this, I am encouraged more by the high-end outcomes now than I was at the draft. To go back to that, one of the previous conversations, I think there is more of that, he goes out and averages, three and year three or year four, 22, 7-5 or whatever. That's one of those kind of things. I don't think he's ever going to be a 30 point a game scorer. That's not really going to happen, I don't think, for him. But one of those super well-rounded, top 30, 40 player in the league kind of forwards is what they're hoping he's going to be. I'm not saying he's going to be there. I wouldn't project that yet, but I would certainly project him just based on pre-draft and this rookie season to be a perennial top 60, 70 player in the league, really good two-way forward. And those guys are extremely valuable. Not to put a number on it, but how much do those guys get paid now? They get paid a ton. Look at OG Anunoby, who's basically that kind of player. And they're different strengths. I get all that. But I'm talking about he got a five-year deal for $200+ million. That's the kind of player I think Richey is going to become. Not necessarily a star, if I had to project right now, but someone who every team in the league would want. Every team. And that's simple, and he has to get there. He's not there yet. He's got to get there. But that's kind of where my baseline has shifted to as far as projecting him, just from combining what I saw pre-draft and what I've seen so far through, 70 games.
Then to just kind of wrap up here, I kind of want to pivot to just the Hawks at large. And I'm just going to kind of put the ball in your court. And just what's kind of one or two things with this team at large? It can be Richey still, if that's the route you want to go, but that you've kind of found the most interesting, weird, bizarre, exciting, undercover, just interesting with this team at large.
The layup answer is the Dyson Daniels statistical ridiculousness. I won't even do that because it's been done enough. I'm actually encouraged that it's actually gotten a lot of national coverage the last few weeks about Dyson's having a ridiculous all-timer production season defensively. And you can quibble with it. I'm not someone who thinks he has to be defensive player of the year. I think guards, it's a high bar, but he should be a candidate this year because Wemby's not in there anymore. So there isn't a clear candidate to me, which means Dyson should be a candidate. That's my only take on that. Doesn't mean he has to win, but should be up there. But beyond Dyson, who's just been crazy good, I think it's been a little bit undercovered that the Hawks, this past summer made a clear future-facing decision, right? I traded DeJounte Murray for a package that netted them a young prospect in Dyson and 2 first-round picks, right? That's a clear, like, we're not trying to win right now move. That's a future-facing move. Then their second-best player, Jalen Johnson, got hurt for the season in January. And they didn't really do anything to, like, add to the team in the offseason, like, with veterans. Like, they didn't, like, go stock the cupboard with veterans. Then they traded DeAndre Hunter in a move that everyone seemed to hate, that I didn't hate. I thought it was okay. Didn't love it either at the deadline. And I say all that to preface by saying the Hawks are going to win more games this year than last year by a comfortable margin. And it's, like, pretty encouraging season. Now, it's hard to, like, get to that if you're just a casual fan that says, look, the Hawks are 36 and 38 right now as we're talking. Like, that's not impressive. I'm not saying you throw a parade for that. You don't. But I think it's, like, kind of been undercovered that the Hawks have been taking a pretty decent step forward, and they had this very, very interesting young core. Like, it made the rounds on social media last couple of days that the Hawks starting five most nights is younger than the Auburn Tigers starting five.
Yeah.
And that's, like, obviously part of that's that college has gotten older in the NIL era. I get that. But, like, the Hawks have a lot of good players on their team. And, you know, there's decisions to be made. They have the Trae Young domino coming up pretty soon. Extend or trade or whatever they're going to do with Trae, and he's their best player for the franchise in a very long time, and we'll see. But the combination of I include Trae in this, not everybody does, but I include Trae in this, Trae and Dyson and Richey and Jalen Johnson, the four of them, pretty impressive. And then Onyeka Okongwu, it's not that podcast, but he's been really good for like 2 months now. So I think it's just been a sneakily positive season for a team that's probably going to be like the 7 or 8 seed in the East, so it won't be like covered that way. But when you factor in what they did this summer and where they actually ended up in a season that was like clearly kind of a retooling effort on the fly to still be like a 500 team, is, and again, with Jalen out for 2.5 months, it's pretty impressive.
I lied. One more question. Because I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. I don't necessarily need, you know, concrete names unless you've done some draft work and want to provide them. But one of the teams, you know, whenever we do our kind of team-wide mock drafts, one of the teams we always really struggle with is the Hawks, because it's like,
yeah,
I don't know what to do because I don't know what they're doing. So, you know, they're currently slotted like middle of the first round. What kind of are you looking for from a draft standpoint?
So they are very difficult. I've done some draft stuff already, as you might expect, but it's also what picks are they going to have? Because they don't have their own pick.
Right.
So it's gonna be the Kings, so if they get Kings the pick 13
right now.
Is 13, 14.
Lakers at 24. Yeah.
But the Kings pick is top 12 protected. So they're either gonna not get it or it's gonna be 13 or 14. That's basically what it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Lakers pick will be somewhere in the 20s at this point, it seems like. So decent size range there in a draft where, like, from, I don't know where my line is right now yet, but like somewhere in that like 8 to 10 to like 25 range is like, I don't know what to make heads or tails some of these guys, to be honest with you. And then positionally, they don't have a screaming need. Like, I don't like drafting for need anyway, but like even doing mocks, you know how this is. Like, it's easier to do mocks if you have a team that has a screaming need on the roster.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, just plug that guy in there, easy. The Hawks don't really have that. So for me, it's going to be similar to what it's been for a while. And it's like best player available that's not a small guard would be my entire thing, basically. Like, I like him fine. I wouldn't want to take Jeremiah Fierce on a team with Trae Young. I just wouldn't.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's just one example of a guy. But like, they could go center. They do like Okongwu. He's taken a step forward this year. They could still draft a center, for instance, which puts guys on the radar at that position. I'm a sucker for Colin Murray-Boyles as a weird, awesome player, but like, how does he fit in Atlanta? I don't really know what they would think of Colin Murray-Boyles, to be honest with you, on a team with Jalen Johnson as well. Like, those guys are not the same player, but they kind of overlap in some respects. Anyway, there's not a single archetype for me, but what I do think that they need to try to find, whether it's in the draft or in another way, is more shooting. We talked about Richey on this podcast. He right now, like, they are really, really, really banking on him being a high-level shooter. And he has been for a while now. But the rest of their guys, other than Trae, who's obviously a good shooter just in a different way, they don't have a lot of shooting on their roster. Dyson is never going to be a great shooter. Jalen's just okay. Like, a lot of their core pieces are not top-level shooters. They could use another guy. Like, pick your sniper of choice, like, you know, Liam McNeely or whatever. Like, pick whichever guy. I'm not saying they have to draft a shooter in the first round of this draft. But, like, for me, it's, like, hard for them to take a non-shooter. Not impossible, but like kind of difficult with where they're building. So that's not a specific answer at all. I'm sorry for not giving you more of an answer there.
No, it's
but,
very
the range is very wide. I mean, that's like, you can also go like, and I say this lovingly because I mentioned before, I love role players. You could go like with like Neat Clifford. And I love Neat Clifford. I'm a big fan. Like, he wouldn't light any Hawks fan on fire, I don't think. He's 23 years old, all those things. But they have a pretty wide range of where they could go in the draft, which makes it fun for me. Maybe less fun for you doing mock drafts. But it does allow me to talk about like 20 guys in the lead up between whatever the Hawks are eliminated in the draft. It's like, that's obviously the lead topic for 2 months, probably. It's like, if there's more, the more guys, the merrier for me. Like, sign me up to talk about everybody. So yeah, wide range.
Absolutely. Brad, thank you so much for taking the time. Everyone go follow Brad. He does awesome work. Handle is in the description for ease, but Brad, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.